D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you up until 5 o'clock when Predators pregame starts. Predators at Red Wings, a 6 p.m. puck drop in the D, not Big D. Silly underdog picks coming up in 20 minutes. Be listening for your chance to win if you represent the people and win. You will win a pair of tickets for Music City Madness as the Tennessee men's basketball team takes on Illinois at Bridgestone Arena Saturday, December 6th. The Vols, a big win last night against Houston, exacting some revenge after the Elite Eight loss last year. But let's talk about the Tennessee-Vanderbilt football game, and there's really no one better to do that with than our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And he is brought to you by, if I can find it, a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Hi, Chad. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Good to be on with you.
So I saw that you and Hutton had Diego Pavia on Hot Mic earlier this week. What was the most fascinating thing you heard from Diego Pavia during your interview?
Well, I did get him on record saying that he will be going to the NFL next year. That was the most fascinating thing because there's a lot of doubt that he's actually going to leave Vanderbilt, and that, you know, part of this lawsuit and everything else is that he's going to try to find a way to get even more eligibility, which, I mean, I'll go ahead and say it. Joey Aguilar joined the lawsuit. That would be awesome for Tennessee. If he was granted another year, it's terrible for college football as a whole. Like, the whole thing with Diego Pavia, it's terrible. It's terrible precedent for college football. It was great for Vandy, but I don't think it's good to have, you know, 25, 26, 27-year-olds in the sport that can just stay forever. So hopefully they get some sort of handle on all of that. But, you know, I think it was just I asked him, why are you the Heisman Trophy winner? And he gave his reasoning, and he's getting a lot of hate online for answering the question and telling everyone why he believes he should win the Heisman. And, you know, I don't really get it. I mean, we're in an era of self-promotion, and I know a lot of people still don't like that, but I mean, the guy's got every right to make his sales pitch as to why he should win the Heisman Trophy. But he also gave a ton of credit to his teammates and his offensive line and how improved they are this year. So that was the big takeaway for me, was that he did go on record saying, I am ready for the NFL and I'm going to be in the NFL next year. He even talked about Cam Ward and the Titans and that being a place he'd love to be a backup for at some point. But yeah, that he's going pro and that he made his pitch for the Heisman Trophy. And a lot of people, and as you guys know, you know, they're not quick to just tell, hey, guys, great take on that online. Usually it's pretty negative, and that's what it's been for Diego Pavia this week.
So your battered Vol syndrome did not come into effect last weekend. Tennessee finally vanquishes Florida in the Swamp for the first time in more than 20 years. We've obviously been talking about this game on Saturday from the Vanderbilt perspective, excuse me. So let me ask you this question, Chad. Fill in the blank here. Tennessee wins if blank.
Well, first off, my battered Vol syndrome didn't even have a chance to peak out on Saturday. I mean, it was like, it was 28-0 before he could blink. It was 31-0 at halftime, and Tennessee just sat on the ball the entire second half. And Florida completely conceded at halftime and ran the ball and wanted to get out of there. So that was a wild beatdown of Florida, which 31 points were not enough for me to vanquish all the demons of years past. I wish they would have scored more points in the second half, but beggars can't be choosers. So that was a really good win for Tennessee. I think, guys, from the Tennessee perspective, you look at that and you see a team that after the loss to Oklahoma, it was, oh boy, they're out of the playoff race. You know, fans are talking like, oh, I don't even care anymore. Who cares about this season if it's not the playoffs? It's playoff or bust. The players are going to feel the same way. They're going to start looking around for other options. And instead, Tennessee handled business against a outmatched New Mexico State team. And they went to Florida and treated it like a business trip. And it's a team that's showing no signs of quit late in the season just because they have three losses. So I really think that for Tennessee to win this game, it's all about Joey Aguilar and not forcing it. That Florida game was a great example. Tennessee against Oklahoma got impatient. They had a couple of turnovers, that one right before halftime, where Joey's just pressing a little too much, and he sails the ball to the safety, and it's a game-changing play. Against Florida, they were content to play, you know, two high safeties, and Tennessee was content to go over the middle, crossing routes, hit them with some short stuff, run the football, and they killed them with it. It was a death by a thousand paper cuts but it worked out well. If Vandy comes out with the same game plan that says we're not going to let Brazel beat us deep, you're going to have to be patient and beat us over the middle, Joey's got to be willing to do that. And if for Tennessee's offense to work, he can't be turning the ball over the way he was the previous few weeks. I think if they do that, Tennessee's going to have a great shot at winning this game, because if you look at the track record between Josh Heupel and Clark Lee, it's not pretty. And I know a lot of those, Vandy was completely outmatched, but a year ago with Diego Pavia, they had barely over 200 yards of offense in that game against Tennessee, and Tennessee had 538 yards with a worse offense led by Nico Iamaleava. So they've had Vandy's number. If that continues, I think it all comes down to the turnover game.
Now, Chad, did anything surprise you with this week's ranking? And also, what did you make of Dan Landing's comments about his team, you know, not playing basically a cupcake, and that they played nine conference games?
Well, I mean, I'll start with Dan Lanning. His non-conference schedule, I think they won like 128-28 or something against their teams. It wasn't like they scheduled Murderer's Row. You know, they played Oregon State, who's no longer in a power conference. They played the worst Oklahoma State team of our lifetime. And they played Montana State in the non-conference. So they played three bad non-conference games. I think it's weird only because the SEC's going to nine games next year. You know, if it wasn't, if it was still in limbo of whether or not they were going to stick at eight or go to nine, I would get the Big Ten still hammering on the SEC for not playing that extra conference game. But the fact that they're going to that conference game, and oh, by the way, I researched it, all the teams that played a cupcake game this past week in the SEC, all of their strength of schedules is better than Oregon's. And Oregon's isn't bad. They're 24th in the country. But all of those teams that he was poking fun at, even after that cupcake game, still had a tougher schedule than Oregon. Why? Because they play in the SEC. And there's no easy weeks in the SEC, and there are some easy weeks in the Big Ten with some programs that are down. So I thought it was a weird comment from Dan Lanning, and the fact they're going to nine games, I don't think they really, you know, needed to say anything about that. And what was the first question again? Sorry.
No, just were there any surprises within the college football playoff rankings?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So the 6-7 joke was a surprise from Hunter Yurecek. That was odd. Maybe now kids will stop using it after it was so cringeworthy with him saying it. That could be the one positive from all of that. No, you know, no real surprises. I think it's just from the Vanderbilt perspective, it's just more affirmation that not only do you need to win, you might need to win with some style points, sadly, if you're Vandy, and you're going to have some things happen around you. I think it starts with Miami losing to Pitt. You're going to need that to go down. Auburn beating Alabama would be huge for Vanderbilt. So there's a number of things, Kansas and Utah. You know, Utah did not look great a week ago, but they survived. Can Kansas upset them in Lawrence this week? That would be big for Vanderbilt. But outside of that, you know, no real giant surprises for me. And I'm also not surprised that they're going to just completely ignore head-to-head when it comes to Notre Dame and Miami. That doesn't surprise me one bit. So nothing really surprised me with any of this.
Now, Lane Kiffin, obviously, you know, it's probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest story in college football right now. Obviously, he has to make a decision. But one, do you think he's going to leave, or do you think he's going to stay at Ole Miss? But then two, if he leaves, what do you think that does to Ole Miss in the college football playoff? Do you think that ultimately takes them out if they do lose again, if they do lose their last game in the Egg Bowl, or do you think it'll keep them in regardless?
It's going to make it very interesting between them and Vandy. Let's say if Vandy goes on the road and beats a top 25 Tennessee team, that's going to be far and away their best win of the year, you know, and away from home to do that. So I think Vandy coming in hot, and Ole Miss with all the uncertainty, and then if Lane Kiffin leaves and they lose the Egg Bowl, that's going to make an interesting discussion between those two and others with two losses, Miami even. So I think it'd make it very interesting. I hope they don't penalize Ole Miss for their coach leaving, because if we're going to be serious about this being about the players and about the team, I hate when a team is penalized for nothing that they did wrong. I mean, it's not their fault that their coach is leaving, you know, for another job. So I hope that won't factor into it, but they've already said that it might. And I don't know what Lane Kiffin's going to do, guys, but the longer this goes, it's a real opportunity. And Lane Kiffin always does the surprising thing throughout his career. It's a real opportunity for him to kind of make the hero turn in the end of all of this and stay at Ole Miss. You know, hey, I really labored over it, and it was a tough decision, and I prayed about it and talked to my family, and at the end of the day, this is the best place in college football, and it's the best place for me, so I'm staying at Ole Miss. I mean, can you imagine the ticker tape parades they're going to be throwing for Lane Kiffin in Oxford if he decides to stay? I feel like the longer it goes, the more that maybe he might decide to stay. But if you're asking me just, you know, gut reaction, what's he going to do right now? Mm-hmm. He's going to go to LSU. That's what I think he's being advised to do by his agent. And I think ultimately that's what he's going to do. And maybe he did tell Keith Carter and all the Ole Miss powers that be that, hey, I really haven't made up my mind yet, so let's just readdress it after the Egg Bowl, get through that, and then we can come up with a plan. And here's the other thing, and I threw this out on my show. I wouldn't be shocked if he announces his decision on College Game Day. You know, Jimmy Sexton's his agent. Jimmy Sexton is Nick Saban's agent. Of course, they have their history. They got James Franklin on the show right after he was fired. I would not be shocked if Lane Kiffin makes his announcement and his decision a la LeBron James many years ago, live on television on ESPN on Saturday morning.
Chad Withrow is with us. Chad, back to the Vanderbilt-Tennessee game, just the matchup. Where would you say, on a scale of 1 to 10, Josh Heupel right now is using the tempo meter? I guess, is he going warp speed, or are they still measured on how they're doing it right now? Because I did not get to see their game against Florida.
Yeah, you know, Willie, it's really game to game. They used it really well early against Oklahoma when they were about to build a two-score lead before they had the fumble that was returned for a touchdown. Florida, they used it really well in the first drive because Florida was giving them the run game and they were taking it. So they were running the ball quickly. But then as the game went on, obviously they slowed it down. And, I mean, they held the ball for 8 minutes and 15 seconds to end the game in the swamp. I mean, they played as slow as a service academy would play late in that game just to get out of there. So they really kind of – they pick and choose where they use it throughout the year. I think they're going to want to play with some fast tempo against Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's style is what's going to frustrate a team like Tennessee because they're going to run the play clock down. They're going to try to dominate time of possession. Tennessee's defense has not been that good this year, although they've really improved the last couple of weeks with their communication. But if they continue to get third and two and third and three and third and four, I think Tennessee starts to get frustrated. They get a little antsy. And I think that causes Josh Heupel to pick up the pace a little bit offensively at times. So I think they're going to want to play fast on Saturday, but it's really opponent dependent so far this year as to how fast they're going to play.
I do think tempo is really important because Vanderbilt has shown that they can pick up the tempo and they've been really effective doing it. But I do think that they will go in at least trying to string it out and do what they've done to a lot of teams and try, like you said, to eat clock, make it a little bit of a lower possession game. But that's something to watch as the game unfolds. Quick switch over to the hoops. In light of the big win last night for Tennessee, what do you think Tennessee's basketball team looks like right now as it's shaping up?
You know, it's very different than a year ago. And I know Rick Barnes said it after the game. Like, they had no, you know this, Willie, I mean, they had no post presence a year ago. They had no one that could go back to the basket and throw it down to and get a bucket. Felix Okpara is a shot blocker and a rebounder, a good energy guy. Cade Phillips, the same exact way. But, I mean, you look up and down that roster, and J.P. Estrella was hurt last year. And he went out this offseason, and he got Jalen Carey. Estrella is going to be a huge difference maker for this team as a seven-footer down low. They've just got so many big guys they can go to in such depth that it really changes the makeup of this team. And I think just the straight one-to-one of Houston a year ago and how they were able to bully Tennessee down low on the offensive glass versus Tennessee winning the rebounding battle at this time around and scoring down low the way they did shows how this team has changed. Now, Nate Amen to me is the great X factor because he's such a unicorn of a player. I mean, he's a 6'11" shooter who can bring the ball up the court. But the physicality of older teams like Houston, we saw last night, kind of got to him in that game. But, you know, they've got a dominant guard, Jacoby Gillespie, who can score with anybody in the conference. They got a really good and deep front court, and they got a lottery pick as a one-and-done freshman. So, look, I think the sky's the limit for this Tennessee team. They went to the Elite Eight the last 2 years, I wouldn't be shocked if they're the type of team that could do that once again. Here's the thing about the SEC, Willie, and you know this. They got the of all the power conference, they have the worst record against 10-POM top 60 teams right now. So this is not going to be, 14 teams going to the NCAA tournament this year in the SEC. The early schedule's not been kind to this conference. So Tennessee, Vanderbilt, who's looked good early, they're going to need some of those teams to kind of carry the torch for them, because the Kentuckys of the world have fallen flat on their face.
Yeah, good point. It's different than last year. Last one for you. Chad, you've been watching these games for a long time. Would it be fair to say this is the most anticipated Vanderbilt-Tennessee game in our lifetime? I don't know. How 1982? How far back would you go?
This is the most impactful, most important Tennessee-Vandy game, certainly in my lifetime. I mean, you'd probably have to go back before World War II to think about games that were bigger on the national spotlight. I mean, anything with any television presence, like, this is the biggest that it's ever been. And I think so much for Vanderbilt. You know, a year ago, Willie, we kind of talked about it going into the game. Like, Tennessee had everything to lose. You know, Vandy had nothing to lose in that game. Diego Pavia was a little banged up going into it. But when Vandy got up 14-0, I thought to myself, Vandy is going to single-handedly ruin Tennessee's season. And not only that, they're going to ruin their offseason, because it's all anyone's going to remember is that all you had to do was go to Nashville and beat Vandy to get to the college football playoff, and you lost. And it was going to put this air of negativity around the program. Tennessee's in that position this year. I mean, you know, make no mistake about it. Like, Vandy's going into this game, I don't know that they're assured a spot in the college football playoff if they win. Stuff has to happen, but to have that truly great year and the greatest season in Vandy history, they got to beat their arch rival in Tennessee on Saturday. So will Tennessee play loose in this game? I don't think Vandy's going to play tight. I don't think that's in Diego Pavia's DNA. But if Vandy wins this game, Willie, I mean, you're a better Vandy historian than me. It's easily the greatest season in program history, right? And if they don't win, it's a really good season, but they finish 9-3 and they lose to all the ranked opponents on their schedule. So it's just a very different tenor, win or lose, for this game for Vandy. And Tennessee wants to win. I mean, this is not a, oh my gosh, you know, it's okay if you lose to Vandy situation. But man, the pressure has flipped from Tennessee to Vandy from season to season. It's been crazy to watch.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us usually every Friday, but today he was kind enough to join us on Wednesday. And, of course, you can hear him and our friend Jonathan Hutton on Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Chad, great stuff as always. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll catch up next week.
Hey, if Diego Pavia wins this lawsuit, I think Willie's got a few more three-pointers in him. So I know he's a little bit up there in years, but well, I think he could come off the bench and launch it from three. So keep in mind, Willie, you could have some eligibility left.
Chad, the way I figure it, the way it's going now, like, I only played 3 years of basketball, so I have at least two more years to play. So I'm about to start getting in shape if that lawsuit
goes.
Don't
give him any ideas, please.
Mark Byington is going to call you off the bench, Willie. You're going to have to bury a big clutch three-point shot at some point. So get ready for that, my man.
Chad,
okay. I can do what they do a lot of times these days, just put the guy in the corner. We used to not do that. Now you put the shooters in the corner, I'll just stand right there. Somebody get a double team. Leave me, I'm there.
The least amount of cardio possible. That's
exactly
what you need at this point.
Chad, have a great holiday. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Thanks.
615-737-1025. It is time for Silly Underdog Picks. Hal Gill will join us. Chris Sanders will join us. And we will get our picks for the week coming up next. And be listening for your chance to participate and win a pair of tickets to see the Tennessee men's basketball team take on the Fighting Illini of Illinois at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, December 6th, which I believe is a week from Saturday. So if you want those tickets, be listening for the cue to call to represent the people. But Silly Underdog Picks is coming up next, 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.